well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. I have my studio audience, because I don't let it be like this, but I guess I've got my barnyard audience of Mario and the chickens hanging out, so you may hear a crow or two in the background. You will also momentarily hear from NRA ILA Executive Director John Comerford talking about, well, a number of topics, but first and foremost, the cert petition that has been filed in Duncan versus Bonta. That is the challenge to California's ban on magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds. This is a case that has been bouncing around the courts for almost a decade, went up to the Supreme Court back 3 years ago, and it was one of those cases that was GVR'd after Bruin. So the Supreme Court granting cert, vacating the lower court decision, kicking the case back down to the Ninth Circuit for a do-over in light of what was said in Bruin. Now, rather than the Ninth Circuit deciding this case a second time, they kicked it all the way back down to U.S. District Judge Roger Benitez, who had previously decided that California's magazine ban violates the Second Amendment. Now, I don't think anybody thought that Judge Benitez was going to suddenly find this ban constitutional based on Bruin. Instead, that was an attempt to slow walk the Supreme Court getting a hold of this case by starting the process all over again. Well, it has taken 3 years, but the Supreme Court will have a chance to consider this coming up this fall. The Ninth Circuit, well, again, I guess I should do the procedural work here. Judge Benitez, the second time around, yes, found that the ban is unconstitutional. The Ninth Circuit on banc, actually a three-judge panel agreed with Judge Benitez this time around, then an en banc panel overturned that decision, saying, no. These bans are perfectly fine. They're compatible with the Constitution. We'll get into why the Ninth Circuit en banc said what they did when we talk with John Comerford. We also going to be taking a look at a couple of other cases that are pending before the Supreme Court. And the prospect of whether or not the DOJ is going to get involved in any of these cases as well. So a fascinating conversation with John Comerford. Take a look and a listen. John, thanks so much for coming on the program this morning. It's good to see you, sir.
Always happy to be on.
And it is great to see the NRA taking the fight to the Supreme Court, in this case, Duncan versus Bonta, a case that has been rattling around the Ninth Circuit for years. I'm pretty sure you and I both had more hair on our heads when this case was filed the first time around. This is one of those cases that it's actually been decided twice by U.S. District Judge Roger Benitez, pre-Bruin, post-Bruin. Both times he found that California's ban on magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds violates the Constitution. Both times the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has said, hang on there, not so fast. No, it's perfectly fine for California to not only ban the sale of these magazines, but to tell people who had lawfully purchased them decades ago that they have to hand them over to the state of California or destroy them or move them out of state. This is a case that was filed originally by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, but I know that it's been supported by the NRA every step of the way. And now the cert petition has been filed with the Supreme Court.
You got it. It's been around a long time. We filed this case back in 2017. And for your listeners out there and the viewers, I mean, this is the case that brought you Freedom Week in California with Judge Benitez, or some may call him Saint Benitez, after his decision. So, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned CRPA. CRPA is NRA State Association in California. And before we kind of change tactics, our modern cases, our newer cases, have NRA as a listed plaintiff. Think about this one the same as the Bruin case. It was NYSRPA from New York, our state association, versus Bruin. But NRA strategized, helped come up with the concept for the legal argument, and helped fund the case. I mean, this is a, you know, for folks that don't really know how expensive these things are, this is going to be a multiple seven-figure investment if this case goes all the way through the Supreme Court, which we hope it will. We file these things to win. We don't file these cases to fundraise or just for talking points. We solely file these to see them all the way through. And everyone on here knows that the people of California have been through a lot, and it's time to rack up a big win on a case like this.
Absolutely. And I'm quoting from the cert petition here. And again, we talked about the fact that this is the second time around for Duncan before the Ninth Circuit. The cert petition says that the Ninth Circuit not only doubled down on its pre-Bruin precedent, but reached the remarkable conclusion that California's sweeping ban on common arms does not even implicate
the Second Amendment. Now, according to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, John, magazines aren't arms, right? They're not protected by the Second Amendment whatsoever. So California could impose a 5-round limit. They could impose a 1-round limit. They could ban external magazines altogether, according to the Ninth Circuit, and that wouldn't violate our right to keep and bear arms at all.
Well, keep in mind, in this case, this is where Judge Van Dyke put out that video response. And, you know, according to him, even if this logic was applied, even triggers would not be covered. I mean, it's would be any part of the gun wouldn't be considered an arm. And look, California, I've said this time and I'll say it again, is California is a petri dish for bad ideas. And we're seeing that coming out of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals as well. And that's why, you know, that last election on November 5th was so important, because President Trump has a real chance to change the entire makeup of the Ninth Circuit through vacancies and retirement. So, you know, going to the polls next November to protect that majority in the Senate to make sure his appointments are protected is critical. And this is a great example of that, because we can change the Ninth Circuit and bring a dose of reality to the fiction that's been coming out of that court.
Absolutely. I mean, we actually saw during Trump's first term, there was parity on the Ninth Circuit for a while. And again, during Biden's administration, he was able to appoint some judges there and kind of put a liberal majority in place. But, you know, honestly, I mean, this is not the same Ninth Circuit that was the Ninth Circus a decade ago, right? We've seen several good 3-judge panel decisions, including the 3-judge panel decision in Duncan. We even saw an en banc panel deny a request by Attorney General Rob Bonta to rehear a case in which California's gun rationing law was ruled unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. So that's the first time, I think, in what, 50 or 60 some odd cases that the Ninth Circuit has actually said, no, this law goes too far. So hopefully that's a sign of things to come. But you're right, with Donald Trump appointing judges, not Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or Pete Buttigieg or whoever, it's a much better opportunity to get a fair hearing on the right to keep and bear arms. And I'll add this too, John. I mean, you know, this is a different DOJ than it was during the Biden administration. We just saw a case out of Florida today where the DOJ has decided to drop its appeal of a Florida man, a postal worker who was arrested for carrying he had a concealed carry license. He was carrying for self-defense on the job, but he was arrested. A U.S. District Court judge said, look, there's no historical tradition of banning guns and postal facilities. Joe Biden's DOJ appealed that decision to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, but Pam Bondi's DOJ, Donald Trump's DOJ, dropping that appeal today. So Emmanuel Ayala will no longer face prosecution for that. That's one of several cases where the Trump administration has taken a very different view than Merrick Garland or Joe Biden's DOJ. Are you hopeful, and do you believe that we'll see the Solicitor General weigh in support of NRA's position, that the Supreme Court needs to take this case and that the ban on magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds is unconstitutional?
Well, look, this is our third cert petition that will be pending before this new court that starts this fall. So we have under 21 gun ban out of Florida. NRA has an SBR case that's pending already that's been filed, and now we have this one. So DOJ has an opportunity to come in strong on behalf of America's gun owners and really try to get the court to take one of these cases. Look what Justice Kavanaugh said when they denied cert in Snopes and Ocean State Tactical. Look, people were disappointed, but what did he say? He said that the court will most likely need to take up this issue in the next year or two. And we're hopeful that the Duncan case is the one he's referring to because it's the most comprehensive piece of litigation that's out there. However, right behind it, we have a so-called assault weapons ban case in Illinois with the Barnett case. That's NRA's case. It was combined with others and other Second Amendment groups that are challenging as well. And then we have the New Jersey case. So there are multiple trains on the track heading to that station of the Supreme Court. And DOJ, we're hopeful that they will have involvement in that Seventh Circuit case. So you're right. It's a totally different Department of Justice. Pam Bondi is letting her staff support these cases and support the constitutional rights of the gun owners out there. So I'm excited to see what these next few years bring. But we are very optimistic that the Supreme Court is going to take one of these hardware cases. And then your listeners will see why a case like this has to go back to the starting point, because if we win on one of these, they go back to the starting point, just like after Bruin when NRA won there. That's where that historical standard comes from. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting times ahead.
It is. And yeah, you know, I know that there's, excuse me, some speculation that that maybe the court will wait until they could take up a, you know, the Illinois case deals with both a ban on so-called assault weapons and a magazine ban, because that's both included in the Protect Illinois Communities Act. Duncan is a magazine-only case. Frankly, I'd like to see the court take all of these cases as quickly as possible, but we'll see. And I do expect and anticipate that the Supreme Court is going to take a hardware case. I was bitterly disappointed that Snope was not the vehicle that they could have used last term and decided to kick this can down the road. But it is what it is. And thankfully, you know, again, we've got multiple tracks, right? As you say, we've got multiple trains on the tracks. And that's one of the reasons why, because frankly, the odds of the Supreme Court taking one case are not very good. But if you keep presenting this issue time and time again, you allow those circuit court splits to develop and deepen, makes it more likely that the court is going to take one of these cases. And again, I suspect that you're right. Hopefully, Justice Kavanaugh is right. We will see one of these cases. And I want to briefly just touch on, John, before we let you go here, one of the other cases that is pending before the Supreme Court, NRA versus Glass, that you mentioned a couple of minutes ago. That's the challenge to Florida's ban on gun sales to adults 18, 19, and 20 years old. The 11th Circuit bizarrely declared that these young adults are actually minors and possess no Second Amendment rights whatsoever. But even if they did, it's not a real burden on their Second Amendment rights because they could get a gun as a gift or something, even though they can't go and buy one from a gun store. Tomorrow, the state of Florida's reply brief is due. And Florida Attorney General James Uthmeyer said he doesn't want to defend this law. So I'm very curious to see what that reply brief looks like. Do you have any indication as to what the state of Florida's position is going to be? And if the attorney general doesn't want to defend this law, is that, you think it makes it more or less likely the Supreme Court would take this case? And who would defend this law if not Florida's attorney general?
Well, it's an interesting set of facts. And the new attorney general in Florida, he's a strong Second Amendment supporter. We have full confidence in his support of that. You're seeing it already. They don't want to support the law that was passed. NRH worked very hard this legislative session to try to get that changed through the legislature, and the Senate president unfortunately blocked that. So we're continuing with our court case, and we're very optimistic that the Supreme Court wants to take a look at this issue as well. All eyes are going to be on Florida to see what they file in their reply. They could even support our position. But remember, we lost in the 11th Circuit. So if Florida is not agreeing with the 11th Circuit, so they would be it creates kind of almost a quasi split there in that position. So we're hoping that that's attractive to SCOTUS, and they'll grant cert in this case, and then we can argue and fix that wrong, because we know that issue is one that's percolated in numerous states. So remember, it's out of Florida, but a ruling at SCOTUS is going to impact the whole country, and that's the entire goal when we file these.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there are a couple of Fourth Circuit cases that are pending before the Supreme Court. It's roughly the same issue, dealing specifically with handgun sales to under 21s. Fourth Circuit, again, declared that that's perfectly fine, too. And I guess, you know, again, young adults could just be written out of the Constitution, at least when it comes to the right to keep and bear arms. According to these judges, not according to the National Rifle Association, not according to tens of millions of gun owners. And John Comerford, Executive Director of NRA's Institute for Legislative Action, thank you again for all the work that you're doing. It is great to have you on the program. I love seeing the cooperation and the coalition building that the NRA is engaged in. But more importantly, I love to see the NRA back in the arena, fighting for our right to keep and bear arms in a very visible way. So thank you for what you do, and keep up the great work, sir.
Yeah, thanks again for having me, Cam, and stay tuned. We have some more cases coming very soon.
Thanks very much to John for coming on the program. Looking forward to having him back here again before long, and also looking forward to finding out what that next bit of NRA litigation is all about that John alluded to. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Indiana. Here's the headline. Convicted armed robber given probation, arrested again, this time for probation violation involving fentanyl. Yeah, so as the Republic newspaper in Columbus, Indiana reports, 21-year-old Mark Mathis was arrested by community corrections officers last Saturday afternoon on a probation violation at the community corrections office. Bartholomew County Sheriff deputies took him into custody there. He's being held without bond now, according to jail records, for violating his probation. Mathis received a 9-year suspended sentence for armed robbery not long ago. In fact, it was in June that he admitted as part of a plea bargain to committed an armed robbery at a local gas station in August of last year. And he got that suspended 9-year sentence just last month in Bartholomew Circuit Court. He pleaded guilty to armed robbery as a level 3 felony on June the 6th in relation to a robbery that he committed on August 19th, 2024 at a Circle K. Judge Kelly Benjamin ordered the suspended sentence and directed Mathis to the Bartholomew County Jail, but said he would be given the opportunity to enter into a work release program once a spot became available, and then transition to a sober living facility as part of the plea agreement. He was also supposed to undergo a substance abuse and mental health evaluation, complete 200 hours of community service, was asked to take a drug screening following sentencing, and was ordered to have no contact with any Circle K locations. He had been in jail 142 days following his arrest. The judge ordered that as time served. So what's really interesting here, besides the fact that this guy who just got a suspended sentence last month for armed robbery has apparently already violated his probation, there was this interesting aside buried at the bottom of the story in the Republic. Testimony during the hearing via probable cause affidavit revealed that Mathis entered the Circle K just after 3:50 a.m. last August, wearing a mask, displaying what appeared to be a black firearm, tapped to get the clerk's attention, asked for money in the register. Victim stated in testimony that Mathis apologized for what he was doing during the robbery, to which the clerk told him, "You don't have to do this." He eventually made off with $150, which he said was to fuel in addiction to fentanyl. Mathis stated he chose the time and location because he thought there wouldn't be any patrons, and, quote, because he was aware that the clerk wouldn't be allowed a firearm per Circle K policy. Now, I don't know about you, but I always wonder, like, how often are criminals aware of these gun-free zones, and how often do they take that into consideration? Generally, I don't know that these questions get asked in court, and I don't know that the answers ever get really covered in the press, but in this case, kudos to the Republic for actually including that information, because it does suggest that, yes, at least some criminals are aware of these policies and do look for these gun-free zones to carry out their crimes because they know that the risk of being shot by their intended victim is going to be greatly reduced because those victims want to keep their job, right? And so they choose not to be able to defend themselves, right, in order to stay gainfully employed. Now, obviously, some folks will choose to be dismissed from their job rather than lose their life over what's in the cash register. But I thought it was interesting, again, that Mathis, even in the throes of addiction, was apparently cognizant of Circle K's policy and chose to commit that armed robbery at a location where, again, he knew that a company policy would, if not ensure that his victim would be disarmed, would certainly give much greater odds to those circumstances. All right, on to today's armed citizen story, where somebody was not disarmed. This from the Bay Area of California. Police identify man killed a Bay Area gas station. Shooter claims self-defense. Now, this is very early, I will say. So it is possible that the individual who shot will be charged with a crime. But based on the initial police reporting, based on the fact that she has not been arrested, I'm thinking she does have a very strong self-defense argument, and evidence at the scene may be leading police to concur with her claim of self-defense. Anyway, this was a Sunday afternoon, Vacaville, California. The deceased identified as a 42-year-old named Jason DeMar Robinson from San Francisco. Officers responded to reports of gunfire about 7:40 Sunday evening. And when they got to this gas station, they found Robinson suffering from a gunshot wound. Despite life-saving efforts at the scene, he was pronounced dead inside the gas station convenience store where he had run after being shot. The East Bay Times reports that the woman involved remained at the scene and was detained for questioning. Investigators say that Robinson and the woman had previously been in a romantic relationship and that a, quote, violent confrontation preceded the shooting. The woman told officers she fired in self-defense and a firearm was recovered at the scene. Police said on Friday that the woman had not been arrested, that their investigation continues. Once it's complete, it'll be turned over to the Solano County DA's office for formal review and a determination of whether or not it was self-defense. Now, again, if there was evidence at the scene that led police to believe that this woman's story did not add up, that she was not acting in self-defense, given that Robinson died and she would have been facing or could be facing murder charges. I'm guessing they would have erred on the side of caution and placed her in cuffs, formally arrested her, left it up to the DA to decide whether or not to pursue charges. The fact that they did not do that suggests, anyway, that there is pretty clear and convincing evidence that this woman was acting in self-defense. So we will keep our eyes on this story and to let you know what, if any, decision the Solano County DA's office makes when that investigation is completed. That is, if the local media there bothers to report on the outcome of this case. All right. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A 11-year-old girl in Massachusetts who actually saved a 5-year-old who fell down a well in the front yard of his parents' home. This was this past weekend. Scary moments. Apparently, the 5-year-old just kind of fell through the cover of the well, fell down about 20 feet into this well, kind of broke his fall on a pipe and a rock, which doesn't sound like it's going to break the fall very much, but the boy was apparently uninjured in the fall, but he's stuck there at the bottom of this well. There is water there. Juliana Fisher heard the screams of the 5-year-old's parents when they realized what had happened. So she ran across the street, called 911. The mom, in this case, Kathleen Freeman, eventually grabs the phone from the 11-year-old. And Juliana said, "I saw the ladder that's leaning against their house." She said, I take it. I just put it down, try not to hit him, but like very quickly." Kathleen says, "We told Jack, her son, to like switch over from the pipe that he was holding onto the ladder, just come up slowly." And he was able to get out of the well with the help of his 11-year-old neighbor, Kathleen, and her husband are both praising Juliana Fisher for her quick actions. Kathleen saying she saved the day. It sounds like that may very well have been the case. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And to be calm in the face of chaos, Juliana Fisher, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. And don't forget, on Wednesdays, we do our weekly VIP Gold live chat with Hot Airs at Morrissey. It's every Wednesday, 1:30 Eastern. It's a great way to hang out with other VIP Gold and VIP Platinum members. You can ask Ed and I whatever's on your mind. We are more than happy to talk about the news of the day. I typically do tend to focus on Second Amendment stuff, but every now and then I'll get tossed a curveball, and I don't mind that. But I would love for you to be a part of it. If you are not already a VIP Gold or Platinum member, just head to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your VIP Gold or Platinum membership, or your VIP membership as well. But I would encourage you to upgrade to VIP Gold or Platinum, because you get all kinds of other great benefits. Anyway, hope we see you there. But if not, hope to see you back here again tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. Until we speak again, be well, be safe, and be free.